Hello, and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. I'm Jimmy, and I voted Leave in the Brexit referendum of 2016.
And I'm Jazza, and I've got to admit, I'm kind of confused. Quite a lot of last week has been spent by me on Twitter agreeing with hardcore Brexiteers who are ripping into Theresa May's deal to leave the EU, saying that crashing out would actually be better. Am I, in reality, a buccaneering Brexiteer that believes in a better Britain? But then I remember that I quite like the UK being part of one of the largest economies of the world, having my government held to account by the rest of the European Union, and having the right to live and work across the continent. I voted Remain, by the way. And that wasn't Jimmy. Oh, spoiler! Oh, what a surprise!
Hey, Jake!
Hello! This is Alice Thwaite. She's a journalist friend of mine, and also we went to university together, didn't we?
Thank God that's over.
Oh, it's over. And so, just in... You voted in the
I did.
EU
I did.
Referendum in 2016. How did you vote?
I voted Remain.
But oh dear. I think, the balance of the podcast has gone.
But I think I was more sympathetic towards Leave than most other Remainers.
So I think that you're quite similar to Jimmy. You might hate this. Because he was like... He was Remain until he wasn't.
Right.
He, on balance, ended up deciding Leave is the answer. And I think that you also entertained... You listened to both sides and then decided... on Remain.
The reason I chose Remain, though, is because I like holidays, right? I like going to Berlin quite frequently. I don't like having to pay visas. I quite like going to France. And so that's not really, like, an incredibly justifiable reason in, like, political, like, sovereignty and, like, holding things to account. It's not great for me to just be like, no, I just like spending 30 quid on a flight to Germany.
It's okay. People have voted for much more serious things for much more petty reasons.
This is the thing. This is why I kind of totally reject referendums in general, and indeed most votes, is because
I'm joking.
I don't know what the joke was.
We should reject the people's referendum and just get on with it.
I believe in a representative democracy, right? I fundamentally believe that there's no way that I could have been as clued up on the EU as a lot of politicians who live and breathe politics. I do that a bit, but not that much as compared to Theresa May.
Jacob Rees-Mogg continues to not know very much about Northern Ireland, despite the fact that it's like part of his job.
I should probably say I'm not living in the metropolitan area at the moment. I'm living in Kent, and so
which is an extension. Oh, right. Okay,
no, it's not really. I mean, it voted Leave, right?
Yeah.
And so it's quite interesting being in that environment again and kind of noticing how people think that Jacob Rees-Mogg actually does have a point in their opinions on Northern Ireland. And of course, the people of Kent probably aren't the best people to speak to about the Northern Irish border.
Probably not.
But It's just interesting to be back in an environment full of people who voted Leave. Mm-hmm. And actually, a lot of people who voted Remain are getting very pissed off with... Are you allowed to swear on this podcast?
Of course.
Okay. Are there any words that are not permitted?
Even Jimmy, in the correct kind of context, has used the N-word before. So
oh
I don't think...
God.
Yeah, but like referentially. Yeah, don't worry. That's not a like an invite.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to talk about the C word. I was thinking that.
Oh no,
we can
use the word cunt. It's fine.
Oh right, good. Well, thanks. I might keep that in my
But
back
anyway,
pocket.
This is the Right Dishonourable podcast. We meet regularly, sometimes, to talk about politics, social issues, and current events. Jimmy's away this week because he has.
A life.
A life, and I continue not to, so I decided to drag a friend in.
Who also doesn't have a life.
This week, as with every week, are going to be talking about three topics. First of all, Theresa May's not very happy, is she? She's having a bit of a rough time with the EU.
Do you think she's been happy for the last 2 years?
No, I think she's having a horrible time, which makes me like her more.
Can I actually say something about Theresa May that many people know?
She has rhythm.
Well, she does have something, and she's got type 1 diabetes, right?
Yeah.
And it's something where I think about the Clinton and the Trump election was hinged so much on the health of either of those people. Mm-hmm. And not once have we kind of gone, Theresa May has type 1 diabetes. She literally has to inject herself with insulin like every couple of hours. And the one thing that really does make diabetes worse is stress. Mm-hmm. So it's... She must, like... What a... tough time. Like, I'm trying not to swear. What shit time that she's going through right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, she did choose the most stressful job.
Or did the job
world.
Choose her?
Oh.
No, she chose the job.
She no, she herself. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. No, she said, "I'm running for prime minister." but I think that that's also like it's an interesting part of her that doesn't get talked about very much. I think because largely it isn't necessarily hugely relevant, but she is the first prime minister in like modern times to have such a serious kind of like medical condition.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's presented her Chequers deal to the European Union, to the European Council, which is kind of like representatives of all of the member states of the European Union. And Donald Tusk said no. Or whatever the Polish equivalent of that is. Is it nine?
That's Norn. German.
Nin.
Let's assume it begins with an N.
Yes, he said negative. And has basically told Theresa May to go back to the drawing board. And Theresa May has put on a very strong kind of facade here and said, like, we need to be respected in the same way that we are respecting the EU. We're going to, like, have a little bit of talk about this diplomacy.
What do you think?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, sorry.
I'm doing the introduction. It's okay, Alice. Sorry. You're new. It's fine.
Sorry.
Secondly, we're going to be talking about the Lib Dems. Yes, they do still exist. They actually just had their party conference. No, I didn't notice that it was going on until halfway through either, and I'm a Lib Dem. everybody seems to be thinking that Gina Miller is going to be the next leader of the Lib Dems, until she vehemently said that she wasn't even going to join the Lib Dems at her stump speech.
And that was the only piece of news from the conference.
Only piece of news. No, also, Vince Cable misspoke and called what he meant to say an erotic spasm an exotic spism. Or something.
Ooh, what's a spism?
No idea. He just stumbled over his words.
But what, an erotic spasm sounds like quite an interesting sentence come from Vince Cable, full stop, right?
I mean, he was trying to make headlines, but then the headline was he stumbled over his words. We're going to ask the question because Jimmy and I are Lib Dems, and so we both agree that the Lib Dems should exist, but I want to talk with somebody who isn't necessarily party affiliated to about why my party should exist. Please validate me.
Okay.
And then finally, there's this guy, Brett Kavanaugh, who, like, had Kavanaugh. A few beers. Kavanaugh.
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 Re-record.
Kavanaugh. So Brett. So this guy, Brett, he's being put forward.
Kavanaugh.
For...
Kavanaugh.
No, we'll just call him Brett. So Brett. he's been put forward for Supreme Justice by Donald Trump. He's the president, just in case you forgot. But he got drunk, Brett Kavanaugh, got drunk when he was like 17, had a few too many beers, and then like accidentally sexually assaulted somebody. Like it happens to the rest of us. Like we really shouldn't make a big deal about it. And everybody's kind of going a little bit crazy. And why even, what, like every guy has done this, you know? Like it's totally normal, and he was 17.
I wish podcast listeners could see Jazz's eyes right now. As he's kind of like doing this massively ironic facial expression, but you're not going to be able to see that, so it's
no.
Just for me only. It's my
it's
eyes
for
only.
Your eyes only. It's because you're very special to me, Alice. Your top line opinion on Brett Kavanaugh.
My top line, I've got a nuanced opinion on this.
We love a little bit of nuance here, but also we loves the banter. You know, we also like when people give us money on Patreon, so I'm going to beg you for money after this musical interlude. Did you like that little segue? Very proud of myself. Hello, dear listener. It's Jazza here. I'm sure you already know we are a listener-supported podcast, which means we depend on donations from you guys on the crowdfunding platform Patreon in order to, well, frankly, line our own pockets and go on holidays. Jokes. If you think that this show is worth like a dollar, if you'd like to like buy us a coffee or a drink as like a thank you, head over to patreon.com/rightdishonorable, and we'd really appreciate anything that you feel would be appropriate to give us. Equally, no pressure, this is always going to be a free podcast.
You can also check out audible.com/rightdishonorable if you're planning on trying out an audiobook. Send some money our way with our affiliate link. I mean, affiliate links are fun. Right, we're going to continue with the show where Alice is very informative.
Alice, before this weekend, what was your opinion of, like, the Chequers deal? Of the kind of softy Brexit thing that Theresa May had put together and present and was presenting this week to the European Union?
To be honest, kind of similar to what I said about representative democracy, I don't know enough about EU law or the position. I know what, obviously, it's in the papers, but I just kind of don't have an opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's apparently the best thing that May can put together, and mm-hmm. I know that a lot of
people... Do you believe her? A lot of people are criticising her.
So, actually, do you know what I think is going on right now?
Mm.
And this could be wildly wrong.
We love speculation here.
Bear with me.
So our tagline is, as truth as resources permit.
And the resources that you currently have are...
So,
you know, there's been a lot of headlines this week as well about the fact that EU airports are getting very pissed off with the EU because they're saying, you know, how bad a no deal would be for mm-hmm. EU airports. And also there's been the reports of Hungary kind of breaking ranks from the EU on this, like, being anti-UK. And I think, isn't it Poland and Ukraine are looking pretty similar to join?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that this, like, EU unity really exists in the way that they're trying to make it exist. They're trying to have, like, this tough stance on mm-hmm. the UK, which, by the way, I think is wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that if there is, like, a democratic entity, you should be able to leave it. Mm-hmm. There should be circumstances in which it is easy to leave, mm-hmm. and that all members should be part of it voluntarily. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it feels like some sort of authoritarian mm-hmm. regime, right? So the EU is starting to kind of crumble a little bit as well, which we're not kind of seeing so much in the Remain press, really.
Do you think we're... I would say that Hungary and Poland have quite extreme governments at the moment, and so are probably not representative of the wider European Union. They have, like Christian nationalists in Poland, and sure. I mean, legit crazy people in Hungary.
But who represents the whole of Europe? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Donald Tusk.
Like, to say you represent an entirety view of other people.
But that's why they had this meeting in Salzburg to kind of present it to other heads of government.
Yeah, but the point is it's not unified. Mm-hmm. So, just like, the EU isn't as tough.
Yeah, there's going to be nuance, but I also understand why the European Union has to have a single stance on it, because otherwise it just gets a little bit silly, and that's kind of the point of the EU having kind of this unitary kind of... It's a union.
Yeah, sure, you understand why it's advantageous for the EU to do that. Whether or not that's practical mm-hmm. is another matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I actually think is going to happen is there's going to be this crazy standoff, basically. It's like a game of chicken that's mm-hmm. being played between the EU and the UK right now, mm-hmm. where both don't really want a no deal. Both recognise that the deal that's on the table is really bad, and mm-hmm. at the 11th hour, at 11:59, everyone's going to, like, there's going to be so much that happens, mm-hmm. because...
They want to reach this by November.
It's not going to happen. Like, there's going to be some sort of weird deadline we don't know about, and everyone's going to be like, we're missing all the deadlines, and all the press is going to get crazy. And as the UK stays maybe firm in Theresa May, then the EU is going to start getting more and more panicked about the prospect of a no deal.
But the problem is that the UK isn't standing firm with Theresa May. The only people who seem to think that Chequers is a good deal are her direct allies in her government, the people who have their own departments and stuff, because there's collective responsibility there. Everybody else in the country, whether you're Remain or Leave, seems to think that it's a bad idea.
So let's just say that this is a theory that I've got, that mm-hmm. actually it is some sort of massive game of chicken, mm-hmm. which is quite typical of, like, politics in general, because mm-hmm. someone, like, whoever moves first is going to have a disadvantage. Whoever concedes first is going to have a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So
if I believe that, if I take the European side in this, and I think that they have a right to treat the UK in a way that is in the EU's best interest, do you think that I am gobbling up anti-British propaganda?
Oh my God. I mean...
It's a phrase that we've used by a fan of the podcast, Tom Harwood, who...
I don't like the idea of, like... I think we're both kind of, like, feeling a little bit weird about what Britain stands for as like a country, in terms of both like the history that we both, you know, we both went to school in the 90s and the history definitely wasn't nuanced there. So I don't really know what Britain is, but I do think that we might stand more of a chance than some of the papers that we read are giving credit for. And I think that there is a lot of things going behind the scenes where business in Europe, like the airports coming forward, there could be a lot of pressure on the EU to actually give the UK a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to happen until the 11th hour.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so they say that the 11th hour, we need to have a deal agreed.
It's March, though.
We need a deal agreed by November so that it can be ratified, so that it can go through all of the processes in Parliament. In the European Parliament and in the UK as well.
So it might be November, but it also could be March.
But then it's also as if Chequers would have a majority in the UK Parliament. As if that Theresa May doesn't have that kind of executive power to be able to push through this kind of a deal with the European Union. She would need Parliament to be able to ratify it.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't enough support for Chequers, which is kind of why I'm a little bit confused why she's still flogging the dead horse. I guess she's trying to get... like the public on side with her, so that they will, so that people in her party will then be more likely to support her if the deal becomes popular. But I can't think of really a single mainstream newspaper who are backing the Chequers deal.
No, everyone's like screaming no deal, this is all people's vote, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What did you think? So Donald Tusk, who is the president of the European Union Council, which is one of the organs of the European Union, where it's not the Parliament and it's not the Commission, it's where the part of the European Union that represents all of the member states. He has some fantastic Instagram game. He's trying to reach out to the kids.
Well, no, thank fuck for that.
No, yeah, good for him.
I mean, I'm glad that Donald Tusk is investing his time in his Instagram.
Apparently he comes up with the ideas as well, so it's great. He's not just been using Instagram, he's been using Instagram stories.
My God.
I know. At least he's not trying to use Snapchat. And he did an Instagram story.
To be fair, I'm not on Snapchat.
He did an Instagram story that had him giving some cakes to Theresa May. And the caption is, "A piece of cake, perhaps? Sorry, no cherries." Which was kind of like a little bit of a call to the fact that the UK wants to have its cake and eat it, and also wants to cherry pick a deal. I thought it was quite funny. This has pissed off an awful lot of people in the Brexit Twitter sphere, saying that it was undiplomatic, that it was insulting to the UK. Have you seen it? You're looking at it right now. What do you think of it? Is that a sensible thing for the President of the EU Council?
Let me be absolutely clear. Mm-hmm. I don't really like the EU's behaviour through this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
What do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of people did vote Brexit because of the EU's treatment of the Greek crisis, right? The way that they kind of forced Greece into doing a number of deals that were completely out of the scope of like the Greek economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a number of people who voted Brexit on this for this way. And all the EU is doing is proving that it is quite ruthless, totally heartless, and totally incapable of compromise.
I understand that it has to work in its best interest.
Sure. Then I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. But what about Donald Tusk's joke?
Yeah, but it's just like, that's what I'm more getting at. Is it just shows someone who's a bit of a twat, doesn't it?
Do you think so? I think so. Do you think that that's an appropriate... Do you think that if you were in his shoes, you wouldn't be...
I mean, if I was in his shoes, kind of I would be throwing jokes all over the shop.
Yeah, you'd be incredibly inappropriate.
I'd be a laugh a minute. But I'm not. And there's a reason I'm not trying to become whatever he is. Look, it's probably like all of these tribalizing things. Like, for people who like the EU, they'll find it funny. For people who don't like the EU, they won't find it funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably inappropriate. I mean, you can just look at jokes that are made around football matches to know that if someone feels a particular way about something, they're going to either find it really funny or take offense.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably a shit move.
Yeah, I understand. I actually think that his Instagram game and his social media game is really bloody good.
What's the point of it?
For outreach, so that it can become more accessible, so that especially young people can engage with like what a dusty bureaucratic organ like the EU Council is doing. I think that is really important.
Or what they might see, and I'm saying this as someone who hasn't thought this through, I'm just kind of being devil's advocate, which I'm
welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast.
But all what they're doing is they're showing that Donald Tusk is no better than someone like Donald Trump.
Oh, I don't know.
Or no better than someone that's... like Kanye West, who's like announced that he's going to run for president in 2024. Mm-hmm. Like, they've just shown that they're petty, they're childish, that politics isn't kind of like something that's serious that interferes in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. It's about not giving the UK its cake with its cherry on top.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off.
Yeah, no, perhaps there is that kind of a tone of like, oh, I'm not going to back down to the deal. Everything's about deal making now.
Yeah, ever like Donald Trump. Oh, I'm such a great... businessman.
He did write the second best book in the world after the Bible, The Art of the Deal.
My God. Good, yeah. Sorry. Objective fact. As truthful as resources permit.
As I said, resources skeptical. So...
What's your take?
What's my take on Donald Tusk? Or
on the Chequers deal? On Theresa May, on the topic of which we discuss.
I mean, so there are obviously three options now on the table. They are Remain, crash out of the European Union, or to have kind of like this weird pick and choosy, like Chequers deal, which is more, I think is more Remain than it is Leave. And I understand why a lot of people who voted Remain think that that's a bad idea. People who voted Leave think that's a bad idea, sure. Because a lot of, especially those in who are kind of like theoretical Leavers, people who have who voted with their around the ideology of kind of like sovereignty and all of those kinds of things, Chequers is not compatible with those with that ideology.
Mm.
Right, the idea of, you know, of needing to be completely independent from the European Union. I've spoken to Jimmy on the podcast in the past about the fact that I think maybe my second best choice after Remain, continuity Remain, is crash out of the European Union, because I think that there would need to be a reset button. Rather than us kind of still being like half in, half out, having to adhere to certain regulations and not having a say in them, not having a say in the EU's external policy and its external face, but still being hugely affected by them, I think that long term is a really, really bad thing for the country. I come across on this podcast because I'm juxtaposed with Jimmy as a lefty liberal. I'm a big nationalist. I want the UK to do well.
Mm.
And I want us to have like a big voice, but I felt like our voice was like biggest as part of the EU. But then if we're going to kind of be a Lego brick stuck on the outside, I think that that's worse than us being an independent entity and kind of aiming for being like a Japan or an Japan's probably a bit too high, but a Japan or an Australia, one of those kind of more...
I hope you don't have any Australian listeners.
No,
Japan's too high, but yeah, sure. But Australia.
No, but I'm thinking in terms of like GDP and stuff like that. Right? Like, Japan is.
It would be foolish to aim for Korea, Nigeria,
maybe Korea. No deal is appalling. It's a terrible... So many people are going to be so incredibly affected by this. It's going to be a huge shock to so many businesses that after... like, our economy still isn't doing fantastically well. And it's going to... A lot of businesses are going to have to fold if we end up having no deal. So many businesses rely on at least the temporary continuation of loads of these things. So in terms of, like, from a business and economic outset, I think that... Chequers is probably quite sensible because it's a stopgap. It kicks the can a little bit further down the road. Best plan for me is still continuity Remain. We had a really good deal with continuity Remain. We were not part of the Euro. We had sent the second largest number of MEPs to Parliament. We basically dictated financial policy of the European Union, which meant that London is like this time zone's like central financial hub. Like, we called the shots. We were one of the big leaders, and we were never like 100% wedded to it, but we were big guys.
I agree. I mean, I think it would have been better if we had voted. It would have been better if David Cameron didn't put a referendum on that shitty manifesto when he thought that actually...
He was going to be held to account by Lib Dems again.
Yeah, he thought he could just lose that in a coalition agreement, right? Mm-hmm. That would have been really good if the polls in the 2015 election had been accurate.
Mm-hmm. She means the surveys, not the Polish people, like Donald Tusk.
Oh, yeah, of course, I mean...
Sorry, bad joke?
Yeah.
Bad joke.
That would have been really great. So, and I, like I said, I do believe in a representative democracy.
That's generous of you. The
situation that we currently find ourselves in is that there is absolutely no precedent for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really only do like making predictions when I really know.
Oh no, all of my predictions are with my gut.
Yeah.
Do you know the premise that we have on this? I've predicted every election and referendum result for the past 5 years.
Correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Based on nothing more than just my feelings.
What, so you predicted that the Conservatives would win a majority in 2015?
I predicted a majority in 2015.
My God.
Someone needs to
bottle your gut.
Yeah.
Sell it. How gross is that?
That is really disgusting.
Bye-bye, Jazza.
Before we move on to... my favourite party, the Lib Dems. I want us to talk about May's kind of response a little bit. She, very generous, she seemed pissed off and angry when she'd made her speech. I think it's actually a really good look for her.
I love anger right now. As someone who's just going through a breakup,
yes,
and I've moved onto the anger stage, it mm-hmm. is so much more fulfilling than mm-hmm. being sad and pathetic and empowering, actually. You actually get things done.
Oh, see, now this is just a breakup with the EU and it makes me sad.
Well, feel angry, Jazza. You'll feel better about it.
May said, throughout this process, I have treated the EU with nothing but respect. The UK expects the same. Damning fucking words, especially when juxtaposed with the Donald Tusk Instagram story.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good look for her, and I think that it means that the UK population, at least, is probably going to rally behind her a little bit. We've been offered... she says that she's pissed off with the fact that there's only two offers, one of which compromises the Irish border, and one of which compromises the UK sovereignty, and she's not willing to... She wants something that does neither of those, and so obviously needs to cherry-pick it.
This is the thing about the Irish border, is that there are two players that are playing this game around Northern Ireland. One is Westminster and the other is the EU. And I think that whichever side that you're on, you tend to blame... the other, right? So you're like, lots of papers are very much pro EU, mm-hmm. so they're getting very pissed off at Westminster for using this as a negotiation.
I get very annoyed at to be fair, I think that most people who are calling the shots in Westminster, in the government at least, do realise the severity of an Irish border.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have people like Jacob Rees-Mogg who peddle the idea that you can have a frictionless border, and that a frictionless border has existed since the 1920s, which is a lie. That
But Jacob Rees-Mogg has just given way too much attention.
No, but exactly, and that's part of the problem. As if he knows anything about the way that Northern Ireland works. Like, it's all you need to do is look at... He says that you have frictionless border between Sweden and Norway, and all you need to do is read anything about the border between Sweden and Norway to know that that isn't true. That you end up having delays of up to, like, 3 hours when people and customs have to go through... have to pass over the EU's largest border, right? Like, it makes me very frustrated.
I know nothing. I'm not going to comment because I don't really... I know enough about Northern Irish politics to say I spent 2 days reading about it once.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really expert level. I suppose it does give you a module on an undergraduate course, right?
Yeah, no, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it also makes you now the Righteous Honourable's Northern Ireland correspondent. Congratulations.
I was about to do a Northern Irish accent and really
embarrassed. No,
Yeah.
What's your opinion of the Lib Dems, Alice?
Did the tut and sigh come up?
Uh-huh.
The Lib Dems, like, I think about the history of the Lib Dems. When I was a kid, I used to think that the Lib Dems were really, really, really left wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the bit, because that was basically what my dad... My views of politics, like most kids, just came from my parents.
Because they were anti-war.
They were
in the 2000s, right?
Not,
that was their main distinction.
It wasn't just anti-war, but my father used to go on about the wealth tax and about all these various different things that he thought was opposed to, like, a liberal democracy, and
mm-hmm.
like the fact that if the Lib Dems came in, then, you know, this argument about all the rich people will leave and there'll be no industry or whatever. Like, my dad's very much kind of like, I hope he doesn't listen to it, but he's very much like a working class Thatcherite who did well under Thatcher.
Yeah, so are my family.
That's the thing about the Lib Dems. And so as a result of that, I just feel like the Lib Dems just don't ever have an idea of where they want to go. They just fit into an area that they feel needs solving. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to be a lifelong member of the Lib Dems, let's say you sign up for the Lib Dems when Vince Cable did, mm-hmm. you know, in what, the 80s or the 70s?
Probably, he's like nearly 80. So, yeah.
So, I mean, what on earth does he believe in?
Mm-hmm. I would disagree. I think that there are a core of really strong liberal values that run through the party that are kind of like the reason that I
so someone like
am
Nick
a member.
Clegg, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
We love Nick Clegg.
He's the best Prime Minister that this country's never going to have.
I genuinely was so sad when he lost to Sheffield Hallensey.
I cried.
Anyway, yeah, it was really sad.
By Sir Nick Clegg.
Oh, so, Sir. I feel like that's Sir Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm. No, of course, yeah. Sir.
Sir Nick Clegg.
But the reason that I am still a card-carrying member of the Lib Dems is just because...
What does that mean?
I have a card.
Do you carry it everywhere?
I used to, but then my wallet, I downsized my wallet.
So you're not a card-carrying member of the Lib Dems, you're a card, leave it at home.
All right, okay, so I'm a member of the Lib Dems who has a card and leaves it on my bedside table. Is that all right? It just doesn't roll off the tongue quite as easily, Alice.
I'm just asking for factual accuracy, given that that is the premise of this podcast.
Whenever I read the manifestos, which I do every election... I almost always agree with absolutely everything in them. With the belief in, like, regulation when it's needed. But like, the middle ground.
The issue is that no one trusts the Lib Dems. So, yes, they might print it in their manifesto, but no one actually believes that they'll then follow through with it as a result of what happened with the tuition.
Yeah, because they had to, because they were a minor party in a coalition.
Sure, or they don't know what they believe in.
No, but they compromised. I think that the Lib Dems are still kind of having a bit of a hard time of how do we talk about the time that we were in government between 2010 and 2015 with the Conservatives.
I agree.
And I own it. I think that actually we stopped the Conservatives from having a massive exotic or erotic spasm or whatever it is.
I have to admit, I am very thankful that the Lib Dems were in power from 2010 to 2015. Mm. And I am very sad that they lost that power.
Mm-hmm.
I think if only...
They were a great mediating force.
Yeah, they were. But now they're just totally lost. I mean, this whole thing that Tim Fallon went through about gay...
Why do you think they're lost? What is it that gives you that impression of that lostness?
They're really, like, their whole idea was that they would be, like, the Remain party, right?
I'm not sure that they've decided that either. One of the big problems
of that...
Well,
they were. Like, at the election in 20... When was it? 2017?
Yeah, and then Tim Farron decided to be homophobic.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
2017, yeah.
Yeah, so the election 2017, they were all like, if you want Remain, vote for us. And then no one voted for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
They actually, their share of the vote went down by 0.5%.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though they increased their number of...
And that lady in Richmond lost her seat despite, like, being, like, the poster... What was her name?
I can't remember her name. But she beat Zach Goldsmith in
a by-election. And then Zach Goldsmith won it back.
Yeah.
What? I don't like him at all.
No, he's a bit slimy. He's got nice shoes, though.
Silver Fox.
I think he's just blonde.
No, he's definitely silver.
Is he? He's got one of those weird kind of, like, dimple chins, though.
I've also got one of those.
You've also got one of those weird dimple chins, but his is really pronounced.
Please don't use the word weird when talking about a dimple chin.
It's out of the ordinary.
Right, well, in which case, anything that's out of the ordinary I will describe as weird.
So the reason we're talking about the Lib Dems is because they had their party, it's party conference season, where...
Where no one pays attention to anything and then all people like us have to talk about it.
They go on holiday for like a month. When we're trying to leave the European Union, everyone goes, well, can't stop now. Got to go on holiday, obviously.
But you want a rested mind to deal with this. I'm actually for politics.
I'd quite like a rested mind at some point, Alice.
I know, you don't take weekends ever, do you?
I don't know. It's been a very, very long time. I haven't had a weekend in like 3 years.
Can everyone write to Jazza and just be like, Jazza... We think you'd be a lot better on this podcast if you took the
Yeah, probably.
It's so important.
I do make sure that I have at least 8 hours sleep, though. But they come back from summer, they're back in the chamber for like a week, and then they go off on party conference and nothing gets done for another like month.
I know.
It infuriates me. I think it's an incredibly inefficient way of spending our time.
Well, it's a democracy for an analogue age, Jazza.
Does that mean, Alice?
It means it's not able to keep with the fast-paced nature of which we now find ourselves.
Right, got it. I understand. But the Lib Dems had...
I also think that's bullshit what I just said, just in case, because I know that probably a lot of people are just listening to
sarcasm isn't coming through. Yeah. No, Alice is actually an alright person. She's fine. Gina Miller spoke. Yeah. Who's my best friend. I did an interview with her.
Wow.
Best friend.
She's also very fit.
Yeah, she's incredibly attractive. I kind of want to be her when I grow up. Like, really badly. Just alter democracy.
Sorry?
Alter democracy. As a like, older sexy lady.
Alter democracy?
Yeah.
E-A-L-T-E-R?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Not like not the wo- alter not, not, of not, democracy.
Like, not maybe like the word change, which would be much easier to understand. Oh, do you know what I want to do? Alter.
It's
alter
just a protesting. Synonym. What do you...
Alter. Change.
It was actually... No, they tried it with Obama's 2008 campaign, and it just didn't workshop very well. Alter. No. We don't know why, Barry. Just people aren't getting it. Change is the one we're going to go for. There was a lot of thought of, because Vince Cable is changing the membership rules in order for, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, in order for it to be easier for people to join the party and then also to perhaps run for the leader, you will no longer have to be a member of parliament, probably because there's only about, there's 10 of them? 12 of them? Something like that.
It's not very many.
And now it's been suggested, a lot of people have speculated that Gina Miller, who is the lady who definitely doesn't want to stop Brexit.
She doesn't want
to
stop Brexit.
No, not at all. She just wants it to be democratic.
She just wants it to be legal and fair.
Yes, exactly. Which I actually, to be fair, I'm giving her a jet.
Because let's be honest, the law, I believe her, is neutral, so fine.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people were speculating that she was going to announce that she would run for the leader and that Vince Cable was going to step down. This was kind of like buzzing around. I thought it was bullshit because
Vince Cable is a bad leader of the Lib Dems.
But he's Uncle Vince.
I don't give a shit. Like, he is a bad leader of the Lib Dems. We need someone like Nick Clegg.
Yeah, but
or maybe
he's...
even a woman. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Joanne Swinson. Jo Swinson.
I don't know who she is.
Leila Moran. She was RMP in Oxford, mate.
Was she?
Yep.
Good.
Yeah, good. But Gina Miller
please edit that out.
made it very clear that she had absolutely no intention not only of not being the leader but of never joining the Lib Dems at all.
Do you think
that there is a chance of the Lib Dems ever becoming this movement of the centre that they keep on talking about?
No.
Why?
I just don't think they have a clear message. Mm-hmm. They don't have a clear message. I don't think they get enough attention. They don't attract enough attention by the press. I think
they get more attention than they deserve, actually, and I say that as a member. I'm constantly shocked by the lack of attention that the SNP get.
I think the SNP gets shitloads of attention.
Really?
Scottish politics at the moment is like constant. I mean, like Ruth Davidson and her pregnant bump was on the front of the Sunday Times recently.
Oh, but isn't she our country's favourite pregnant lesbian?
I want her to
be the baby. can I be switched with the baby when it's born?
I just love her.
Yeah, no, she's great.
Yeah. Good. So I think Scottish. I think and Nicola Sturgeon also gets quite a lot of attention. I don't really see much from the Lib Dems at all.
Oh, interesting. I feel like they get a lot more attention because they tend to be South East or London based and so can do a lot of the weekend shows and stuff like that.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Whereas the Scots from Thursday are up in their constituencies and so can't partake in like media spots or very much of that. And all of the mainstream like London media, they're not going to jump on a call. They're going to take them for lunch.
That is unfair.
Mm, isn't it?
Right, sorry.
It's almost like democracy. It's broken.
Moving on.
There is this chasm in the middle of UK politics at the moment, though.
I don't feel like anyone represents me. I think that loads of people don't feel like
apart from Ruth Davidson.
Maybe. I mean, I love her, but I don't know if I really stand for like mm-hmm. like kind of. But there's no one really who's like relatable at all, and mm-hmm. I think most of the country feels like this, right, which is kind of weird. And there's always been talk about bringing a new centrist party together, but whenever I hear who's doing it, I'm like, I don't really like you either. Mm-hmm. And I just think that people have got much more nuanced and detailed, and they kind of have all these various different gut feelings. Mm-hmm.
The king of gut feelings over here. Thank you.
Bottle it up.
Yeah.
So I think there is a big issue, but the Lib Dems, in my opinion, aren't going to fill it.
Are you just waiting for Russell Brand to run for?
Oh my God, he would be the worst.
He would, wouldn't he?
I don't want any celebrities. This whole thing about, oh, I've been a... I was Miranda in Sex and the City. She did a great job in New York, fine.
Mm.
But...
but lost definitively.
Yeah, but I think...
What's her name? Nixon. Something Nixon.
Cynthia Nixon. Yeah, but I think the thing is that she did a job that no one really wanted to do, and she did it very well.
Mm-hmm.
So... I am just sick of like celebrities. Like there was that person who won The Apprentice from ages ago, UK Apprentice, who also went.
Katie Hopkins.
No. Let's not talk about her. I can't remember her name. But I can picture her. She was blonde. Michelle. She ran as an independent in Hull and got nowhere basically, and just tried to like push the campaign based on their social media following.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the majority of people in the UK have very low social media followings, and so if we start picking people based on like these kind of social media representatives and what celebrity looks like, it's not great.
Yeah, but then people didn't vote for Trump because he was on social media. People voted for Trump because he was on their TVs. And in the UK, people aren't necessarily voting for an individual.
I have to say that whenever I say start a sentence with "people voted for Trump because," it is always wrong.
I have the gut though.
Sorry, so. Oh my God, I'm just like, just take me out of the podcast, Jazza. Yeah, no, there's no point. Like, it's just me asking you questions and asking your gut to tell me.
I mean, as long as you know your place, that's very important.
Well, do as a woman.
So you said, Alice, that you had a bit of a nuanced opinion on the Brett Kavanaugh case. So he has been accused of like some sexual misconduct where as a drunken 17-year-old he pinned a girl to the ground, removed her clothing and covered her mouth and like sexually assaulted her essentially. This happened in 1982 and the young woman who was on the receiving end of that was Christine Blasey Ford, who's come forward publicly.
Dr. Christine.
Yeah, professor, actually.
Professor, oh, I'm sorry.
So I one up you. She accused, has made these allegations against him, as he has been put forward as a Supreme Court justice. So, in case you don't know, Supreme Court justices get life terms on the Supreme Court as judges and can be hugely pivotal in cases like abortion and like gay marriage and minority rights and all of these kinds of things. So it's a big deal if you get this kind of a role. This I've been very frustrated with kind of like the partisan nature with which this has been approached. Everybody who is pro-Trump thinks that this lady is lying, and everybody who is against Trump thinks that this is that Kavanaugh should be chucked out, basically.
Right. So,
what do you think,
Kavanaugh?
Kavanaugh.
Whatever. I don't think I'm not
Brit. Armaid Brit.
There's two things that would worry Democrats, right? The first is that they want to make sure that Roe versus Wade, which is the abortion case, isn't overturned, right? And they are scared that if Kavanaugh gets in, that Roe versus Wade, they'll get the five out of nine? How many of them are there?
There's nine of them.
Yeah, yeah. So if they get the five votes they need, then abortion could be overturned.
Yeah, if there is a case that comes forward to the Supreme Court that would challenge Roe versus Wade, then they would potentially be able to overturn it.
Yeah, okay. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that Brett in the past, I think, wrote in like 2009 that the president should be above the law.
Oh, handy.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. That's new information
so,
for me.
So basically...
hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, he also did something right, like, unless there's extenuating circumstances, but he did basically...
In 2009, when Obama was president, that's interesting.
It was definitely when Obama was president. Mm. I always think in terms of, like, odd and even numbers. So it was definitely 2009 or 2011, but it definitely wasn't 2010.
I love how your brain works.
Yeah, just weird ways of categorising things. So those are two reasons why Brett Kavanaugh should not kind of be on the Supreme Court of Justice, right? So the Democrats for ages, though, you can't just go, I don't like his views.
Yeah.
So I think...
That's what happens now, though. That's the irritating thing.
Well, the point is that they can't in order to stop this happening. But what you can do is defamation of character, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're put in a powerful position, you need to have a history of being able to treat people who are powerless well, right? Not that Trump's got that by any means, but that's why like this whole issue around character and whether or not you raped a woman is such a big deal, mm-hmm. especially if you're a Supreme Court justice.
Also, nobody's accusing him of rape.
No,
he's being accused of
I appreciate you. I mean, I'm sure you'll have all the suits, the libel suits, being thrown at you.
Yeah, so, I'm the one who gets them.
Yeah. So Professor Ford went through the appropriate channels, basically, when mm-hmm. talking about her experience with Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's not happened.
She initially sent a letter to her senator or her congresswoman anonymously.
Yeah.
And then and then it was leaked.
It was leaked first, and because it was leaked, she went to the Washington Post.
Yes, and came out publicly.
Yeah, but it was leaked first. Mm. So this was a political move by mm-hmm. the Democrats.
Yeah.
In order to bring this poor woman who suffered something in her teenage, very informative years mm-hmm. into the limelight and suddenly be up for like vitriolic abuse. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion...
And who is now, they've extended her, the time that she has in order to present herself to the committee because of the amount of abuse she's been getting.
In my view, that is totally reprehensible, mm-hmm. right? I'm not a fan of the Democrats' behaviour on that at all. Mm-hmm. Having said that, how on earth are you going to make sure that there's not a Supreme Court justice who believes that the president should be above the law?
Mm-hmm. But this isn't about the Supreme Court justice believing that the president should be above the law. This is about a Supreme Court justice who has, when he was a kid, and these aren't necessarily my views, but this is the argument. Right?
No, but it is about this. It mm-hmm. is about this. It's about making sure that Brett Kavanaugh does not get elected to Supreme mm-hmm. Court justice.
But then do you think that it matters the reason for which he is kind of perhaps removed from the nomination?
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to get at, mm-hmm. is that you can't remove... So that's why I think that the Democrats have acted reprehensibly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, truly reprehensibly. Like, bringing someone who... Like, they haven't exactly treated this woman with respect at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of subjected her to this tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it. Mm-hmm. What happens now, right? And everyone's kind of coming out with editorials about whether or not this is, like... you know, the Me Too movement and everything, and about whether or not you should be penalised for a crime, punished for a crime that happened 30 years ago, and whether or not that does kind of show your character now. Like, mm-hmm. these are the more interesting editorials, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that actually the question is more... It's less about whether or not you should be tried for a crime. I think that we... I don't think that something that happened 30 years ago... that happens when you're a minor is I don't think it's necessarily incredibly useful for somebody to then be pulled in front of a judge and jury in order to be tried. I don't think it's particularly useful. But when that person is somebody who's going to end up with so much power, I think that it's important information about that person's character.
Yeah.
And this, what has really worried me, and maybe it's because I don't know enough straight people, but this idea that this is, the amount of people who've said that this is just the kind of stuff that guys do.
I definitely think it is.
And I am aware that there are guys who have done this kind of stuff, but the idea that this is normal.
It was normal in the 80s.
Yeah, almost definitely.
It was normal in the 90s. It was normal as well in 2008 when I was an undergraduate.
Yeah.
I mean, we really do forget how much like the feminist movement really has come mm-hmm. in the last 10 years. We're reading editorials at the moment about...
But do you think that the way that our culture has changed should then be retroactively kind of...
This is then becomes the moral question,
yeah,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is this sort of behaviour
And you're
acceptable?
The philosopher.
Yeah, but as a result of that, I go, it depends. I just kind of see all the problems in it. Like... I would rather be talking about whether or not someone who believes the president is above the law should be elected by the president to the Supreme Court justice. That, mm-hmm. to me, is a more interesting thing to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, that's the answer is quite clear on that. No.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely not. This whole issue around the Me Too movement has to be, in many ways, like, a positive movement.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a way of showing men, like, how much harm women have suffered.
Mm.
And obviously lots of other minority groups, various different kind of like prejudice and forms of power.
Mm.
But I was chatting with some female friends this morning about the finance industry and how many women like in various different law firms and various different financial institutions have had to go on like work events and have men stalk them back to their hotel rooms and basically try and bash down their door to get through the hotel.
Mm.
And yet there's no kind of like Me Too movement in these industries because there's not enough female power at the top, right? And we all kind of said...
Or public outrage.
Yeah, there's there's no moment. There's no like verbal thing. You just know when a guy's drunk and walking home with you, there's something in his mind that suddenly twitches and goes, oh, I could try this.
Mm.
And that's just something that we all know and we all fear. Because it is fucking scary having someone like bash down your door. So for me, like a positive movement is showing how endemic it is and how widespread it is. And then kind of showing men that, you know, women take on vast amounts of emotional labour. We do so much work that gets absolutely no credit at all. And we get paid less than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just frustrating. And then we get like trolled and abused for kind of calling out these forms of power. And as a result of it, it has become incredibly tribal. So that for me is what the Me Too movement should be about. These questions of punishment, though, like, because it was a crime in the 60s, can you imagine, I mean, I'm not sure this is a great idea and I'm not sure if this is my point of view, but there are so many people who smoke cannabis right now and it's illegal. Imagine if, like, in 30 years' time we found out that cannabis kills babies or something like that, and everyone's like, oh my God, cannabis is the worst, I can't believe you ever smoked cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly everyone is kind of pulled up. Harry Styles is put on trial for smoking cannabis in 2018.
Well, we have kind of like the reverse that's happened it with the gay male kind of like pardoning movement, where people who were charged under buggery laws before the 60s, a lot of them still haven't been pardoned.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, maybe because you're going in kind of the reverse area of going from a guilty verdict to a not guilty verdict, going from a not guilty to a guilty one retrospectively, does make me more uncomfortable.
But then you think about like the Nazi.
But then also, what he did to a woman was always bad.
Yeah, of course it.
Like that was never, it was illegal. Just because it happened a lot. Yeah, and it was illegal at the time. Yeah,
it's like as if I'm suddenly going to go, oh, the Ku Klux Klan, they were living in a racist time period. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about perspective. And that's really how I feel about this, is the Democrats should not have politicized this. They've jumped on the bandwagon here with the Me Too movement and they've politicized it and they've turned it onto whether or not Christine Ford was lying or not, which is bullshit.
And the fact that she is now on the receiving end of US.
I fucking hate them. And I blame the Democrats. I totally blame the Democrats.
For leaking it in the first place.
Yeah. She went through all the official channels.
She did it properly.
She did everything right. You know, she did everything that everyone says that you should do. Why haven't these women gone to the police first? And then BuzzFeed is kind of like showing all these reports of women that did go to the police and women they were raped and then were completely ignored, which we as women knew was going on, right? And so it took the Me Too movement to like take those complaints seriously. So basically, I don't like the Democrats. I don't like Brett Kavanaugh. And I hope he doesn't get elected to Supreme Court Justice. And I wish everyone just give Christine Ford, like, a bunch of flowers.
Excellent. Where can people find you on the internet, Alice?
You can find me at my Twitter handle, which is at Alice Elthwaite. And can I plug an event I'm putting on?
Oh, I'd love it. Yes, go for it.
So I'm the founder of something called the Echo Chamber Club, and we're
Oh, it's brilliant. Should I send people to your Echo Chamber Club podcast as well? Because the episodes are still there.
The episodes are still there. I'm kind of like reformulating what the Echo Chamber Club is, but as part of that, I'm putting on a show, an event, a debate. Oh, it'll be a laugh a minute. It's all about, are we more polarised than ever before? It's on the 23rd of October in East London, and it's with Webroots Democracy.
I'll be there.
And Jazza will sign things for you?
No, I won't. Yeah. Actually, I always carry around a box of Sharpies, because you never know when a fan's going to come up to you, you know? Get them to sign a tit or something.
Good. So you can search for that on Facebook and you can search for that in Eventbrite. I'll be more polarised than ever before. It's done by Webroots Democracy and I'll be speaking on the topic of polarisation. We're going to have a neuropsychologist and or a neuro... Oh, fuck. Oh, is he a psychiatrist?
A brain person.
Someone who knows shit. And also a kind of a machine learning expert to talk about polarisation metrics. Please come. Thank you.
You can find us at Right Dishonor on Twitter. Please leave us a review on iTunes, and if you like what you hear, then think about supporting us on Patreon. It makes a huge amount of difference. We've nearly
or send me a check in the post.
Right, cool. Thanks Alice.
No, you carry on.
All right. See you next week, everybody, when Jimmy will probably be back. Toodaloo.